Shahbanar did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across West Midlands as you listen. This is their story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, nursing training places sit empty while qualified candidates wait years for admission and hospital wards struggle with chronic understaffing.
My name is Shahbanar, and I wanted to become a nurse from the moment I watched my grandmother's final weeks in hospital. I grew up in Perry Bar watching my dad drive buses for Birmingham City Council and my mum serve school dinners at the local primary. When my grandmother was dying, I spent every afternoon at her bedside watching the nurses work. They moved through the ward with this quiet competence, checking medications, adjusting pillows, holding hands when families needed it most. I was 16 and I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. I worked weekends at a local care home through my A-levels, saving every pound for university applications. The residents there called me Little Nurse because I was always the first to notice when someone needed their water topped up or their blanket adjusted. My grades were strong across the board, especially in biology and chemistry. When I submitted my UCAS form in 2019, Birmingham City University felt like the obvious choice. Local, respected nursing program, and I already knew the hospitals where I would train. The rejection email arrived in March. We regret to inform you that we are unable to offer you a place on our nursing program due to current capacity limitations. I called the admissions office immediately. The woman who answered was apologetic but firm. We have more qualified applicants than places, she said. The numbers are set by Health Education England based on their training budget allocation. I asked to speak to someone at Health Education England West Midlands. After being transferred three times, I reached a workforce planning coordinator who explained that their budget came from Treasury spending reviews. There is no funding for additional training places this year, he said. The allocation has been constrained. I asked what constrained meant. He paused. The Treasury sets limits on our spending. We have to work within those parameters. I waited a year and reapplied. Same result. This time, the rejection letter mentioned ongoing financial pressures in workforce development funding. I called again, spoke to a different coordinator who used almost identical language. The budget has been cut, she said. We cannot afford to run expanded programs. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was talking about government debt and belt tightening. I accepted it. I took a job as a healthcare assistant at Sandwell General Hospital. The wards were chronically understaffed. Qualified nurses were working 12-hour shifts, sometimes longer when someone called in sick. I watched agency nurses arrive for triple overtime rates because there were not enough permanent staff. The irony was not lost on me, but I still believed what I had been told about the training budget. Then in 2021, I was walking past Birmingham City University's nursing faculty building when I noticed something odd. The car park was nearly empty at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. I looked through the ground floor windows and saw an entire lecture hall sitting dark. The simulation lab next to it, with its expensive mannequins and monitoring equipment, was also unused. I started paying attention. 3 days that week, I walked past during different hours. Tuesday afternoon, Thursday morning, Friday evening, the pattern was the same. Whole sections of the building were empty, while I knew dozens of people like me were still waiting for training places. I got talking to a woman named Sarah, who had been made redundant from a teaching assistant role at a local primary school. She had a degree in health studies and had worked in clinical support roles before moving to education. She mentioned that several of her former colleagues were in similar situations, qualified educators with healthcare backgrounds who had lost their jobs in the school budget cuts. They could have supported nursing education, but nobody was hiring. That was when I stopped accepting the excuse. If the lecture halls existed, and the equipment existed, and qualified people like Sarah existed who could support the teaching, and people like me existed who wanted to train, then what exactly was it that there was no money for? The building was already paid for. The equipment was already installed. The potential instructors were already trained. I started to understand that the government which prints pounds and issues them had told me it could not find enough of them to connect all these existing pieces together. The treasury that creates money from nothing when it spends had decided that training nurses was too expensive. But expensive compared to what? Compared to the cost of agency nurses working at premium rates? Compared to the cost of hospital delays when wards cannot admit patients? Compared to the human cost of watching my grandmother's generation age into a system without enough hands to care for them? I finally got a place in 2022 when emergency COVID funding briefly expanded the program. Suddenly, the impossible became possible. The same lecture halls that had been unavailable due to budget constraints were filled with eager students. The same university that had told me there was no capacity was running extended cohorts. Nothing about the physical infrastructure had changed. Nothing about the pool of qualified applicants had changed. What changed was that someone in Westminster decided to spend money into existence. I am in my final year now, and I think about this every day. I know people who are still waiting, people with grades as good as mine, people who would be excellent nurses, people who are watching their community struggle with healthcare shortages while they are told there is no room for them in the solution. The excuse was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and people who needed it. I used to accept that there was no funding. I hear it differently now. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. When someone in the Treasury said there was no money for nursing training, they meant they had chosen not to create the money that would train the nurses we desperately needed. This is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare, as though the government that mints the coins could somehow run out of coins.
What Shabana experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound to public investment. Think of a tobacco company in the 1960s demanding absolute proof that cigarettes caused cancer before accepting any health warnings, even when overwhelming evidence pointed to harm. They set an impossible standard of certainty to justify inaction. In Shabana's case, Treasury officials and workforce planners demanded perfect efficiency in nurse training before funding adequate places. They cited rare examples of training programs that did not meet every target, ignored the overwhelming evidence of what happens when healthcare systems are properly funded, and treated any possibility of waste as grounds for systematic underfunding. This standard was never applied to tax cuts for corporations or emergency bailouts for banks. The austerity objection Shabana encountered was that the NHS is a bottomless pit. We cannot keep throwing money at it. This sets an impossible standard where no amount of evidence of need is ever sufficient. No service is truly bottomless. NHS costs are measurable, and the UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany, or the Netherlands. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Birmingham Perry Bar ranks 5 for mayors. 5 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 2,365 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Local organisations received £52.1 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.